This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 439 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
Now, just before we got on, Summer had made some, I don't think she finished her sentence, but she had started to make some kind of remark about my voice.
You're just incredibly calm sounding.
Calm? I mean, I guess. It's just kind of...
It's like NPR took a Xanax.
That's, yeah, I mean, that's pretty good. That's a pretty good description. you're not off. You're not wrong. What I was going to say was, even though I don't think you quite sound the same, you also sound not bad at all, but you also sound more morning-ish.
Well, I have been coughing for 2 weeks, so.
Oh, so you've been prepping for this.
Yeah.
Okay, before we get started.
My voice is not being awesome.
We already started technically, but I might put it in the show notes because it's funny and I mean, it's not related to our show at all, but as most of you probably experienced, most people get text alerts or reminders or whatever from things that you've signed up for. Some of you may or may not know, or some phones or systems or OSs may or may not have certain capabilities, but apparently it's been there for quite a while on iPhones. But I just learned, I don't know, a few months ago that you can, anywhere where you have access to a little tap, tap, tap keyboard on the lower right. I think you have to turn it on in accessibility, but there's a little microphone you can tap and basically to do voice dictation. I don't do it often, but I'll do it sometimes, but I forget it's there because I don't really use it. But one of the funny results of having it turned on, meaning accessible, not meaning that you click it, because if you click it, you know very well it's on, right? So this morning.
No, you don't, because I've had it record full ass conversations and I didn't even know it was recording.
What I'm trying to say is if you have turned it on under accessibility, well, not that. Yeah, it has to be turned on somehow, somewhere to even make it an option. What I'm saying is if you know you want to record something or dictate, then and you hit it, then you know it's on. That's what I'm saying. However, as Summer just described, sometimes it's hit and you have no idea how. So I got a text this morning. It was a normal like reminder text or whatever status text from the post office saying that, oh, a label's been created and it's awaiting shipment in this county or this state, city, whatever. Cause I have a PO box and, you know, I get notifications cause I try to go once a week, but sometimes I don't. And if I know something is coming, I'll absolutely go. So I want all the alerts possible. So I saw it come in. I didn't really read it, but I saw that I had a USPS alert. I'm like, okay, that's fine. Whatever. I'll read it later. So Summer and I were supposed to record a little earlier than this, which won't affect you guys at all because you're going to get it when you're going to get it. But we postponed, or I asked our recording to be postponed about an hour because I hadn't been sleeping well. And so part of this not being sleeping well is like, you know, sleeping, waking up. And as most of you know, or if you've been with us for any length of time, you know that I have kitties and I talk to my kitties all the time. So I had noticed that I had this text alert, like whatever. I didn't even open it. I just saw it come through and I was like, okay, I'll look at it or delete it later. After I get up, now remember, I've texted Summer from bed. I've gotten up to go to the bathroom. I fed the cat. I've gone back to bed to like relax a little bit longer or try and sleep. And so when it was finally time, when the final alarm went off and it was finally time for me to get up, I look over and my phone is open. I mean, it's, you know, it's not like closed or locked or anything. And it's the alert text message is open. Like not only in your text messages, you have to click it somehow for it to be open to do voice text, right? So this is what I see. Now, I hadn't sent it. It wouldn't matter because it's like one of those no reply things. But this is what I
sent apparently... my location to a no reply thing.
Yeah, but doesn't, I'm
not
I don't
on
know
purpose.
How you send location. I know that. I'm just saying I don't. It doesn't really matter what you send them because no one's going to get it. But this is what I didn't send it because the cursor is still blinking. Goodbye. Do you hungry? Come another lovers. Okay. Okay. Monkey baby.
Sounds like you're writing the new Taylor Swift song.
Oh, Lord. I was like, first of all, what the hell? And then I was like, oh, why? First of all, I don't know where goodbye came from. Maybe a cat walked away. I don't know. But I do talk, Summer knows, right? You, most of you, I mean, many of you may know, but I do. This has happened several times. Not just like that I've.
Her cats are just a cover so she can talk to herself. Let's just be honest.
Oh, my goodness. I do that plenty. I don't need a cover. What are you talking about? No, the funny thing is, this is, and as Summer said, this has happened before. And I think I even put it on Facebook. Or, I don't know. I've shared before. I won't share if it's like, you know, embarrassing or if it actually
Summer
will correct me. I don't mind sharing if it's embarrassing. I won't share like an embarrassing picture of me or my
just a vivid description of the embarrassing thing that, so yes. That everyone has it in their mind eye forever.
Yes, so you're welcome. Okay, are we ready to go on? I just wanted to share that because I thought it was so funny, and I maybe not everyone's been through that, because I guess I think you have to have voice to text, or what do you call it? Voice.
For me, it's always that little thingy has always been an option. However, I'm never touching it. And if it's starting, it's not because I did it on purpose. And I do the same thing.
And that's the danger. Yeah.
I do the same thing with video calling people in Messenger.
Yeah, I've done that before, but not.
Like groups. A whole group of people.
Okay, no, I have not done that. And that's a little more dangerous.
I have done it to you.
Did I answer?
I don't remember, because as soon as I see that I've done it, I immediately hang up. So everyone kind of gathers without me and goes, why did Summer call
gathers.
Us?
Like, I imagine like all the, you know, like on the, when people have like a stitch of a stitch of a stitch of a stitch, and you have people like playing in, like looking toward the original stitch. Mm-hmm. That's what I imagine about when you accidentally butt dial.
And that's what I imagine it is when I'm not there.
All the group looking in, but you're like, no, before they do that group look in, I want to hang up.
Yeah. Like it never happened. I don't know what you're talking about.
No, but I didn't voice, not voice, video time, FaceTime, video call, FaceTime. That's more dangerous because, especially in the summertime, you don't know what you might be wearing and not wearing. If it's hot. That's all I'm going to say. Okay. This episode, we'd like to thank co-producer Vex.
On to our read-along. I can't believe I'm already saying that. Oh, I feel like we just finished the last one.
We kind of almost just did.
I know.
With trauma, though. The last one was ended with trauma.
Oh, my God. It was.
It was trauma.
Balls to the wall.
It was trauma.
Seven chapters at a time.
Or 10. I don't even know what we did. It wasn't really that number of
50 pages each.
It was pages. Oh, we never did 100 pages at a time. Come on.
It sure felt like it. I'm fairly sure it was close.
We easily did 50 to 60 at a time.
Either way, we are beginning our written in my own heart's blood read along, which will now be called Moby from here on out, because I'm never going to say all of that all over again.
I was about to say, trying to get, even though I know you know the title, trying to get.
I had it in front of me and I was having a hard time reading it.
It's because of our read along, I mean, it's the same thing, different. I mean, similar problem, maybe different reason. But when she was trying to say, and we continue our, what was it? A breath, not a breath. An echo in the bone. It just sounds, it's our, an echo. It does not
flow.
For me,
that was just funny to me, because at a certain point I had to just find the humor in it and keep going. And I knew it bothered you just a little bit, so I kept doing it. However, this one is way too long and
Moby. It's Moby.
It's going to be Moby from now on. So we will be beginning our Moby read along with the prologue.
This is funny. I'm going to pause for a second. Not literally. Just I'll get back to the read along in a second. It's funny. It's not funny that you start with the prologue. It's good, right? Because it's the first thing that comes up. The thing is, when Summer and I were discussing like how many chapters, how many pages, whatever should we do for, if it were like 10 pages long, we probably would have done one chapter, or decided to do one chapter for the first episode of our Moby read along. And as we were kind of texting back and forth, okay, what do you want to do? Summer was looking at the numbers and she's like, okay, let's do 1 through 3. I'm like, okay, that's fine. And so as I sat down to take notes, and after I had butt voice text, it's no longer a butt dial. It's like, but it is in the same vein as doing something on accident. A butt voice text,
a butt memorandum.
No, because that sounds like it's about your butt. So, I mean, this was not about a butt at all.
But your butt did it.
Well, my butt was way down on the bottom of the bed, nowhere near the top of my head.
You where... just sound like you've got a specially talented butt right now. You're just making it worse for yourself.
So when I sat down to take notes, I was like, oh, wait a second. I can't just start with chapter one. I got to obviously at least look at the prologue and mention it. So I looked through it and I was like, I hope Summer, when she sits to read, I hope she includes it. So the fact that you just said it, I was like, because if you had said chapter one, I was going to have to like, I wouldn't do that.
I didn't put it in our thing because it's never longer than a page. So
it's been two pages before, but yeah, it's certainly not long, not long in general. So, you know, the prologue was not quite short enough to reproduce here. I mean, I didn't want to type it all out, but it is, at least in the ebook, it's less than a page. It's like less than a half a page.
It's like a third of a page.
Yeah, it's we get a brief prologue. It's mostly poetically describing what it is that old women see and do. Like what the youth see, what men see, what old women see. And she writes, or Diana writes, that they see necessity. They guard the spring. They shield the light that they've lit. And Claire is described as standing yet again on the brink of war.
She makes really bad decisions in when she chooses to live. Just saying. Moving on to part one, entitled Nexus.
Do you know what? Wait a second. Do you know what that word always reminds me of? Two things.
Nexus?
Yes. So
makes
there
me think
was
of hair care supplies.
Yes. Okay. That's the first one from the 80s. And it could be older than the 80s, but that's when I remember when in the 70s, I was not alive long enough or cognitively aware enough.
You had a good 4 years.
But I don't know that I could read, is what I'm saying. I never saw a label and
actually,
couldn't read a label.
I don't know. Peeler up.
That's not reading.
It's not, but you made up your own words, which means you're probably a genius.
Stop. So what was the name of that hair care thing? It was like a liquid detangler / liquid conditioner?
Well, they did all kinds of stuff. They did.
What was it called? Was it Nexus?
Humectress by Nexus.
Oh, it was Nexus. Okay. I was wondering if it rhymed with it. Okay, so that was the first thing I thought of, which was like hair or something in a white bottle with, that's what I remember. And like the little tiny, I can't even, like the little arm that comes up, like it squeezes out of a little pump.
Pump arm?
I don't know. It's really small.
It's just a pump. Just call it a pump.
But it wasn't a pump.
Then what was it?
I'm telling you, you don't screw the lid off. You could screw the lid off, but the lid had this little arm thing that popped up that you could pull up and pull down. And then if you pull the lid up, you turn the bottle over and you squirted it out. The other thing it reminded me of, which I didn't learn about until...
I have absolutely no idea what you just described.
Okay, I'll find a picture and share it with you later.
Okay, please and thank you.
The other thing that it reminded me of was LexisNexis, which I did not learn about until grad school. It's like it's a very expensive search.
I'm sure it is, because when I think of Lexus, system. I think of very expensive cars.
Oh, well, that, yeah. I think LexisNexis is older than Lexus car. But anyway, it's a system that most universities, at least now, you know, they purchase access to, probably colleges do. I think JC's might. I don't know. I know universities do. So universities purchase access to it. It's like, it's used for research purposes. There's more than just LexisNexis, but it's a huge search. I don't know
engine?
If it's a database. It's basically a pay to access it. And then it's a search thing, like a search engine. And it searches probably hundreds or thousands of databases. Yes. But that's it. It has nothing to do with the chapter, but that's what Nexus made me think of.
Cool. Well, we are going to start with chapter one, entitled 100 Weight of Stones. And this, they didn't even pause.
Between like the last chapter and this one?
Yes. I'm like, we are 100% goodness. Like
right there.
In it. Like there's no like graceful, welcome back to the novel. Here's where your fair heroine and hero
nope.
have been for the last however long. It's not been any time. Nothing has passed. We are all still in the middle of the cacophony that started with the last chapter of the last book.
Which is funny. Yes. And it's not that I forgot what happened in the last book, but as you're going through reading this and taking notes, I was like, oh my gosh, that's right. Literally, this literally just happened.
Right.
Like, oh crap.
Because Jamie just showed up, saw Lord John. They got pissed at each other, but then they just ran off together. And now we're stuck with, but that's what happened. The very last thing that happened. And we're left with poor Ian. Poor Ian, who doesn't know yet.
Oh,
he doesn't
no.
know yet.
It is June 16th, 1778, somewhere in the forest between Philly. And yes, I was too lazy to type it out Philadelphia. So I'm going to say Philly, whatever it pops up, and Valley Forge. Young Ian is building a cairn for his mother and one for his uncle, having heard that their ship had gone down and he had lost two of the most, not only had he, you know, left, this is what, if this were true, which, I mean, it's sad enough, right? We know, readers know that Jamie and Jenny are not dead, but he does not know
that. These were his last two parental figures.
He, as far as he knows, well, and not even he knows. Yeah, as far as he knows, he left Scotland. And this, to me, makes it even worse than just losing someone. Losing parental figures is obviously bad enough. He had to leave his, I mean, it was his choice. There were reasons. But he, for good reasons, he left. Well, he was accompanying his aunt, right? That wouldn't have been safe for her to be on her own. He left Lallybroch when his dad was literally on his deathbed. So he knew this was, he was never going to see, not only never going to see his dad again, he was not going to be able to attend his freaking funeral.
No, but the that last thing he did awful. Before he left was create a cairn with his brother for his father. And what is he doing? The first thing, not the first thing, obviously, he's been doing some other things since he's been back in the Americas or in the colonies. He's immediately doing the same thing. He just buried his father, and now he thinks he's burying. He thinks that he is making a memorial cairn to both his mother and his surrogate father.
So poor Ian, he's building this cairn, a cairn for his mother and a cairn for his uncle, having heard that their ship, I think the Euterpe, had gone down. He plans, as he's building it, getting stones and putting another stone on, he's thinking about how he's going to bring his family here. First, he's like, oh no, it has to be Fergus first. And then he's like, oh my God, Auntie Claire. No, it has to be Claire. Like, oh my God, this is even more awful than ever. And how am I going to tell her? Just all this stuff. So he's thinking about, how am I going to do this? What's the order of people? So it's like, he decides, okay, Auntie Claire first, then Fergus, and then blah, 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 blah.
But that's where he starts. What was so funny is he was like, Marsley and the children, and maybe Fergus. Fergus knew his mother. Fergus has known his mother longer than he has. And this and that's that. True. And then, oh, crap. Claire.
Yes. It was impossible for him to imagine his mother and Jamie and Uncle Jamie having drowned. Diana writes that he'd seen people drown. And I absolutely do not need details of that. But this was news to me. Are we supposed to have known that Ian had seen people drown?
To be honest, given his experiences with whatever the hell Galis was calling herself.
Oh, that. Oh, or the Mohawk. Who knows?
And the Mohawk. And then also with him being on that ship as a captive.
Yeah, that's true.
Or as a, you know, an indentured servant that was sold. Yeah. He's had experience with things that we don't have all the knowledge of because we weren't following him as a character one-on-one until he became interesting.
He remembers that at Lallybroch, he and his brothers had built a cairn for their father before he died, and there was some mention of it, expense. Diana writes something about the word expense, though. They had his name, their dad's name, carved into the headstone, even though it was a pretty great expense. Ian keeps thinking of the order of people he should be bringing to the cairns, and then once he kind of he's like, okay, I think I have an idea of where I'm going to start, at least. Then he prays that the spirit of the red cedar look over them and guard their souls. He thinks of his cousin Brianna, and he thinks of her and Roger, but he is glad they are safe.
But there must be some relief for that, because he's like, I don't have to worry about them seeing this. They don't have to have any order in that. They are out of time and no longer pertinent to the current storyline occurring to him.
Yes, even though he thinks about that with Brianna, he thinks of his uncle, Claire to a certain extent. Well, no, sorry, Claire's alive. He thinks of his uncle and his mother too, yes. But again, the last, 10 years, his mother, he's not been around his mom. So he hasn't really been able to rely on his mom as someone in his life who's a solid foundation. Previously in Scotland, absolutely. But he hasn't been around her. That person has pretty much always been Jamie. And Auntie Claire, but Auntie Claire's still alive. But with now having lost his mom and his uncle and Brianna being gone, because even though Brianna was not his firm, solid foundation, she was definitely, you know, as we all know, a woman out of her time, she was a very like strong presence, strong character, direct.
She also was very participatory in his healing process after he came back from the Mohawk. So she's not just a
and
cousin.
They talked a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. They were, she was like his therapist.
It was like a co-therapy. Yeah. It was maybe more in his direction, but absolutely. So while she was not in any way going to or able to or ever going to be able to take the place of as firm a foundation or a rock as, say, Uncle Jamie, she was of Jamie. She, not just because, yes, she's his daughter, but she was so like him in that she could be, yes, different from other women in her time, but she could, he could speak to her about things just like he could speak to his uncle, and he could speak to her about things he could not speak to his uncle about. Right. So he misses that. He's thinking a bit basically now about all the things that he's missing, a foundation, people of strength, that kind of thing, reliable, just people whom he has relied on. And he feels a lack of a solid rock under him, which makes him think of Rachel. And then he thinks of William, and he wonders if William knew the truth yet.
Spoiler
and
alert.
Just as the sun goes down and kisses the top of the cairns, he bids farewell to his mother's grave and asks for help from his uncle as he leaves to begin bringing people to pay their last respects to their graves.
I mean, to be fair, he's done now. He doesn't ever have to do this in 20 or 30 years.
Ian?
So, I mean, it's like, yeah, cool. I did it early, but it's done. So now I can take you to where you will be lying at rest or where we will celebrate you. He's good. He just, you know, worked a little harder before he needed to. Moving right along to chapter 2, entitled Dirty Bastard, wherein William Ransom throws a fit.
Willie! Having just come from the scene at the house on Chestnut Street, where he was confronted with positive evidence that, yes, he was the son of James Fraser, William is having a day. He kicked at a loose cobblestone, which landed in a crowd of geese, which made feathers and shizzle fly everywhere. And the goose girl, who was in charge of them, sees this and sees her animals being affected, and she calls him a bastard. And he's like, yes, well, I guess if the shoe
fits.
Yeah,
I'm a bastard.
And a young whore hears the commotion and asks, who's a bastard? And William answers that he is. And she replies, quote, I'm partial to bastards myself. What kind of bastard are you? A wicked exactly. one? An evil one? And he says, a sorry one. She invites him in, and he goes with. He thinks, what did it matter? So what is not said here, and I'm not going to spoil it, we're not given a name, but is this the person that we follow all through the freaking book?
William? Or the whore?
The whore.
I don't know yet.
I think it is. Okay.
You'll know when I know. And that was the very briefest of brief chapters too. Moving right along to chapter 3, entitled, In Which the Woman, as Usual, Picks Up the Pieces. And I feel personally attacked by that title.
Number 17, Chestnut Street. I see the word. The Chestnut Street is right next to Philly and what I typed. Mm-hmm. And I didn't put a comma. So I would have read Chestnut Street, Philly. But if you forget Chestnut and just see the ST Philly, it looks like St. Philly. But okay, mm-hmm. We're in Philadelphia. The residence of Lord and Lady John Gray. After William had left, the place was kind of shredded and not in the sexy way.
That almost sounded like you were going to do like...
Southern?
No, a rap.
Oh, huh? Who?
This place is kind of something. It's something,
oh,
something,
Lord.
Something.
And that actually... Okay, I was not, just so you guys don't ever have to worry about that. I will not do that unless... No, I will not. But the way you started that, like the rhythm you took, mm-hmm. reminded me of something, speaking of which, from the 80s. The world is my... Something is my recital. Isn't that a rap?
That is the song. It's the Beastie Boys. It's time to rock around. That's right. I was like, it's tricky. It's tricky.
That's what I'm saying. But I didn't say the place was, this place was kind of shredded is not part of the rap. I understand.
No, but it's the way it sounded it's the cadence. Like.
That's what I mean. And so, and that's when you said that, and then I laughed and I realized, wait, what you actually, the cadence you actually used sounds like something that actually exists. And
that was my point.
Ha. But not a sexy shredded way. Oh, and by the way, Jenny had arrived in the end of the last book, in case you had forgotten. But most importantly, because this is all Claire's POV, right? Jamie was alive. When Mrs. Fig comes in to find out what in the actual farkle-doodle had happened to the place, Jenny gets the scare of her life. Now, what Diana did not write anything specific except that Jenny was scared or startled, basically, when Mrs. Fig came in. It is not written. What I read between the lines for, and it may not be called on. I mean, this may not be part of it, but what I kind of, there seemed to be something, a gap there. It seemed more than just someone startled someone, like by coming in and speaking and startling her. It sounded to me like it was a combination of being startled and perhaps seeing her first ever black person. But that can't be true because they like just came up the, she would have seen plenty of black people, enslaved or not, right? Because they landed in America or in somewhere in Virginia, and then they had to come up on either by carriage or by boat. They had to take many different ways to get up because the first ship they were going to take left without them, and thankfully so. But anyway, that may not be the truth or the case, but it that part made me laugh because Diana doesn't say that she got why she got the scare of her life, but I guess Mrs. Fig really startled her. And Claire introduces them to each other. Claire notes that while they hadn't ended on good terms, her and Jenny, in Scotland, she still had loved her very much 30 years ago. So, you know, when they first met and back during the Dragonfly and Amber days, you know, that was their high life. And just like that, they were back together. So they made up real lickety-clickety-splickety. Claire asks Mrs. Fig, so can you make some tea? And I will tell you some version of what had gone down.
And I'm going to need something a little bit stronger than your turtle soup, Sherry.
Taking Jamie, Lord John, and William with it. So Mrs. Fig brings the tea, but also a turtle soup. And we know what's up. Meaning, Claire has a memory very closely tied to turtle soup and Jamie and fevers and sex. She asks for some strong alcohol. I think Mrs. Fig brings bourbon. She said, no, brandy. Then she gets started and outlines the morning's events. Jamie's gone off with Lord John. The British Army is after them. The tall person Jenny had met was Jamie's son, and the town has lots of British soldiers. Yes, pretty much, Jenny. That's it. Mrs. Fig asks Claire if she's William's mother, and Claire, which is funny. And Claire says, no, it's not quite that complicated. But she was not going to offer any more of an explanation. Jenny tells about the ship that they were supposed to have gotten on, that it had taken off before they could board. And she tells of how they arrived in Philly, meaning arrived in Virginia, I believe.
I was like, they didn't arrive in Philly.
Well, they did arrive in Philly, but it's how they just arrived in Philly. They arrived on the boat in Virginia, and then the way they got to Philly was a combination of packet boats and carriages and all that kind of thing. Not just to get north, but also, you know, probably slower than they would have liked, obviously, because they were trying to avoid the British. So they had to do it very purposefully and carefully. And as she tells of how they arrived in Philadelphia, Claire can see a brightness in her eyes, Jenny's eyes, that she hadn't seen in 30 years. And she tells of their reception at Fergus and Marsley's print shop. Poor Mrs. Fig is just trying to keep the cast of characters straight. She's trying. And in the end, they don't know where Jamie and Lord John have gone.
There's speculation.
The chapter ends with the lines, alive, I repeated silently to myself. He's alive. Nothing else mattered. Though I did wonder briefly what he'd done with John.
And how honest was John? What did John tell him?
It's just so nice that John is an afterthought. That's what I thought was funny.
Well, of course he is. He's not Jamie.
I mean, he's one of her husbands.
And in case you missed it, in the several times she said it, he's alive. Jamie is. She said it a lot. And that concludes this week's read-along for Moby. Join us next time and we will be continuing our Moby read-along with chapter 4, entitled Don't Ask Questions Where You Don't Want to Hear the Answers.
Again, a very special thanks to this episode's co-producer, Vex. To find out more about how you can support us on Patreon, visit outlanderpod.com/Patreon.
And if you're interested in continuing the conversation outside of listening to our podcast, you can join us on our group at www.outlanderpod.com/group. And if you've always been trying to get your hands on some Outlander Pod branded merch, please visit our shop at www.outlanderpod.com/shop.
If you haven't subscribed to our newsletter, The Outlander Pod Gazette, please do. Find us at outlanderpod.com/newsletter. Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20. Outlander20 for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.